Support for the South Carolina Lead is made possible in part by AARP. The coronavirus continues to affect us all, keeping us apart, but we don't have to be alone. AARP is here in South Carolina, providing information that can help you and your family. Click to connect at aarp.org/sc.
Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the Lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on May 20th, 2020, at my home studio in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. On this episode, we return to the barbershop and do some talking. We close out the governor's Accelerate SC task force with recommendations coming on how to spend $1.9 billion. And we look at the latest DHEC data and hear about how some are looking to the past for guidance on moving forward in this COVID-19 world. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear about how y'all are doing daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1 minute long voicemail with your name and where you're calling from at 803-563-7169. Tell us what you're doing and how life has changed for you and how you're adapting at 803-563-7169. Currently in South Carolina, the spread of COVID-19 remains ongoing, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 407 deaths, and currently there are 9,175 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of May 20th at 6 p.m. 414 patients are hospitalized across the state. Last week, we saw cases that had been steadily declining for 2 weeks jump to a five-week high of 1,218 for the week total. An increase has been expected due to the ramping up of testing. Now remember, you can get tested if you need to for free without a doctor's recommendation. You can find those sites and a lot more information on accelerate.sc.gov. And as of May 19th, 85% of the first 6,413 individuals for which DHEC has data on have recovered from COVID-19. So again, 85% of people have recovered so far at this point. And Governor Henry McMaster announced Wednesday that attractions like things from museums to putt-putt courses can reopen May 22nd. Here's looking at you, Myrtle Beach. Some other restrictions are still in place, so for a full list of these places, check out our show notes. Also, sports leagues will be allowed to begin practicing on May 30th, with competitive play resuming on June 15th. Go Cox! The final Accelerate SC meeting took place on Tuesday, with the final report and recommendations forthcoming. Those recommendations will feature how to spend some $1.9 billion in federal response money, which the governor will then refine and submit to the General Assembly, like he usually does with his budget every year. However, unlike the wide-ranging priorities of a statewide budget, this plan will be tied directly to COVID-19 expenses, one of which is the massive hole record unemployment has blown in what was an amply funded unemployment trust fund. Okay, so $1.9 billion can only be used in facilitating compliance with COVID-19 related public health measures from March through the end of the year. So nice and broad right there, huh? Hence Accelerate SC. So several initial priorities were announced Tuesday, including $500 million for the State Unemployment Trust Fund, with any year-end leftovers flowing back into it, since some $660 million will be needed to make that fund whole. Expanding broadband in the state where 500,000 people aren't connected to reliable internet, in an age where it's as vital as any other utility, and bandwidth gaps are straining families as they try and telework, learn online, and use telehealth services more and more. Former Republican Senator Greg Ryberg explained how his subgroup came up with the funding plan for expanding broadband.
The original intent was that we just provide $250,000 for a statewide mapping plan. It was then believed by the group, the majority of the group, that if we were serious about broadband, then we should seriously put some money on the line about broadband. And so the backbone that we understand for broadband is about an $80 million expenditure. And so what we have on the line for enterprise initiatives is $80 million. Now it's really now up to the General Assembly to come forward with a broadband plan and a broadband structure. And I just implore those members of the General Assembly that make sure that we don't disincentivize private capital and that we have a level playing field on whatever structure we have between public entities and private entities getting into the broadband business.
Separately, $20 million could go to Wi-Fi hotspots. Other funding items suggested, including $250 million for hospital reimbursements, $160 million for 5 days of K-8 academic support and social and emotional support over the summer, along with more education initiatives, and $16.7 million for a PPE stockpile, and money to cover expenses that we've seen rolled out in the continuing resolution, such as millions to cover increased testing and contact tracing. Those are just some of the items that have been proposed, and again, we'll see more of a definite plan soon. McMaster hopes to have a plan from Accelerate SC Director James Burns next week and will roll out his own proposal not long thereafter. Now, lawmakers are then expected to return to Columbia after the June 9th primaries to approve the plan. And again, there is a December 31st deadline to spend that money. Beaufort Republican Senator Tom Davis, who is one of six legislators that served on the task force, hopes that his fellow lawmakers give the governor latitude on his eventual proposal, something that wouldn't be too unexpected since several of his previous budget proposals have been backed by lawmakers.
And that House Ways and Means and Senate Finance will then take that up. And quite frankly, I think they'll take it up with a greater degree of deference than they do when they look at the executive budget. Because what you're talking about here is the knowledge gained by a man who has absolutely lived this night and day, literally, for the last 2 months. And somebody like that deserves great deference. He's been on the front lines. He understands where the needs are. So I expect us to come back into Columbia and in June. I think we'll take up the governor's recommendations. And if I had to guess, I would think that those recommendations would be pretty closely followed by the General Assembly when it passes the appropriations bill. So you start with a net of narrow parameters wherein the general appropriations process, usually it's much broader. So I do think that's going to help us focus the debate. I think the debate will take place more quickly. And I suspect that we'll turn things around very rapidly. And I think that what ultimately is appropriated by the legislature will be very, very similar to what's recommended by the governor. That's my sense.
The Department of Administration is set to hire an outside firm to oversee the accountability and implementation of an eventual plan. McMaster on Tuesday said that he liked the initial look of the proposals, and again, we'll get some more definitive plans from him shortly. And if you didn't know, the governor also closed out the task force meeting with thanks to the 30 members of the task force and a Carly Simon tune.
Nobody does it better. Makes me feel sad for the rest. Nobody does it half as good as you. Baby, you're the best. And you are.
Pop quiz hotshot. Which James Bond movie is that theme song from? Hint. Roger Moore played James Bond. Answer, after we do the numbers. And as a little bit of an outro to politics, we got some more poll numbers to look at. This time from the political consulting firm First Tuesday Strategies of 500 likely voters in the 1st Congressional District. The poll from May 15th through May 18th found two of the contenders for the Republican nomination, Kathy Landing and Nancy Mace, with narrow leads over Democrat Joe Cunningham in the general election. Both were well within the polls, plus or minus 4.4-point margin of error. But reaction to the state's COVID-19 response was more favorable than what we saw in the Palmetto poll. Now, this poll from First Tuesday showed that 51% approved or strongly approved of Governor Henry McMaster's handling of the crisis, compared to 23% who disapproved. And 20% were neutral, they sat on the fence. So, 56% said that they are equally worried about economic and public health together, with 25% saying they're more worried about the economy's health because of COVID-19. You can see all those results via a link in our show notes. And Carly Simon's Nobody Does It Better was the theme to The Spy Who Loved Me. I'm more of a Sean Connery, James Bond, but I don't want any letters. Here in the present day, the buzz of Clippers returned to Circa Barbershop in the Cottontown neighborhood of Columbia after being closed for 2 months. That was also being replicated at their downtown shop and two other locations in Greenville and Charleston. In Cottontown, the space is like others in the chain, clean, white, and minimalist. It feels much bigger thanks to a whole wall of windows bouncing light off the white walls and ceilings down to the white penny tile and exposed painted brick featuring the old Dunn Electric Company logo. Now, there are no shape-up guides or yelling magazine clippings of 90s models as haircut suggestions. Do you remember those? Do people actually see a picture hanging on a shop wall and say, I want that haircut right there? I can see people bringing a picture in, but I digress. Fades and undercuts are the barbershop's bread and butter looks, along with your regular scissor cuts and trims. And on Tuesday, the second day the shop, salons, and other close contact businesses could be open across the state, it appeared as business as usual, with barbers D.R. Granger and Haley Bradstream clipping in face masks and gloves while a third chair sat vacant. D.R. explained to me their updated practices.
We've always followed really tight guidelines through LLR and the state from the barber board's perspective with barberside and hospital-grade disinfectants. So we've added a few extra precautions with our team wearing masks and gloves. And if we're not able to replace the gloves after each service, we kind of lean more towards a hand sanitizer and antibacterial soap. Cleaning down the chairs with disinfectants after each client and the common areas where we have waiting room stations set up, we kind of clean those high trafficked areas way more frequently than we did prior.
And those sanitation protocols are drilled into new barbers. In fact, a new barber can fail their licensing exam by simply forgetting to disinfect equipment just once. And right now, DR's crew across the state is adjusting schedules and reducing some capacity, and they'll eventually reevaluate how things have been going before they start to ramp up.
And what we'll do is we'll kind of ease it out. We've got some barbers working 2 and 3 days a week and kind of ramping, doing a little bit longer days on those days that they're in the shop and we're not running at full capacity. And then we'll review it over the next week to 2 weeks, and then we'll slowly start opening up more times for bookings. The booking was crazy as soon as the website, you know, as soon as the governor announced, we made a post through social media, and then within, you know, it was kind of crazy. Within a couple of hours, it was like 3 weeks were full, and, you know, people were like, you know, what's going on with the website? It's not showing any availability. So that was really cool to see, just like the support that we have from our customers, and we have so many loyal clients and friends that support all of our shops.
Now on Tuesday, there was no line snaking into the adjoining Inda coffee shop since all the appointments are done online. And like DR said, they're kind of hard to come by right now. But we got insight on how one client got a coveted early spot.
I was just really frustrated. I kept booking like 2 weeks before and just like I got canceled. And then I was like, I'm just going to keep booking till it like opens back up. So I finally was able to have a haircut.
That's recent University of South Carolina graduate Malvi Takor sporting a fresh fade. And yes, everyone was there for the haircuts, obviously, but I was really interested in hearing about people's lives right now and finding out how people were figuring this all out. And Malvi said trust is a huge factor that got him in the barber chair on Tuesday.
This is pretty much like my first thing that I'm doing since everything even kind of opened back up. So, and I think it really also matters if you trust the person where you're going. If, like, I don't think I'd feel comfortable enough to try out a new place or someone that I don't know, but like DR I've known for like almost 2.5 years, so I know they're gonna take it serious, so I feel comfortable enough to like be in here, but I don't know about something that I've never heard of.
Over on the understated, square-armed, camel-covered leather couch, I spy a before selfie in the process of being taken. I don't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable or have people change because of my TV camera-toting, face mask-wearing presence. Granted, there's always a possibility you could end up on Circa's stylish Instagram with its 17,000 followers. Alas, I greet our selfie taker.
It's like you're taking a photo. Were you taking a selfie, like a before and after photo?
Maybe.
Can I ask before you get in the chair, just kind of what it's been like for you? I see you're kind of scruffy, your hair's a little longer.
Yeah.
What's it been like for you?
It's been okay. I mean, I'm just overdue for a haircut, right? So that's pretty minimal. But I think I was here the last day they were open, so it timed out pretty well.
That's Dr. Curtis Frankie, who works with an urgent care group in Columbia. And so I ask him what life has been like for him.
Yeah, every day it seems that we get new data, new information, and we have to change what we're doing. And so patient volumes are down. I think everybody's seen that in the healthcare sector, but trying to figure out what the next move is has been exhausting. Trying to figure out how do you take care of people, do it safely, and keep up to date with what's going on. The analogy I always think about is if you defer things long enough, they turn into big problems. And so the concern here is if you're ignoring something that your body's telling you or something you're concerned about, you're gonna have a much harder time in the future. So if you need healthcare, you should still go get it.
And then what are you doing differently personally? Like, are you going out to eat? You're out here right now, obviously you need a haircut, but have you changed your habits? Are you okay with what's going on?
Yeah, definitely changed the habits, I think. Social distancing doesn't mean no socialization at all. It means don't come in contact with 400 people today, please. And so that's kind of been the strategy, right? So lots of hand washing, mask when crowded places, minimizing trips to Lowe's to once a week if you can, instead of every day, which we used to do. So that's been the difference.
Nearby, DR goes through his thorough sanitization process of equipment, which he has two sets of, luckily. He sanitizes the chair and then also sweeps up hair and replaces his gloves. Now he's ready to greet another client. The other barber working, Haley, is cutting another gentleman's hair. And when she's finished and the cape is removed, I see that her client is wearing medical scrubs, and I meet another doctor. Dr. Ross Taylor is an internal medicine resident at Prisma Health here in Columbia.
You know, it had been about 3 months since I got my cut, and I wasn't one of the adventurous ones who tried to cut my hair at home, so it was certainly a mess when I got here today. But Haley did a phenomenal job, and so feeling good, feeling clean, refreshed.
Yes, another doctor and one who also had one of the last haircuts at Circa before they closed. I'm two for two, folks. But Dr. Taylor tells me about his work schedule and how it's changed over the past few weeks.
For about a month, I was in the ICU, so I've been on that side as well, but I've been in the ambulatory side as well. And so from the outpatient side, everything's changed. We've gone to telemedicine and those types of things. But everything, is slowly starting to get back to the norm. High-risk populations, obviously, we're doing telemedicine and we encourage that, but we're going to start seeing patients in the outpatient setting, slowly reintroducing that as appropriate. So,
do you think people have been taking it pretty seriously?
I do, as they should and as we should. I think that people, for the most part, have done a great job with the recommendations and staying home and doing those types of things. So, yeah.
The disappearance of the shaggy quarantine hairdo is just another subtle cue of life gradually moving forward. Down to the Low Country, Charleston was one of the first cities in the state to close down during the early days of the virus. Now it's coming back, with some in the area keeping an eye on what happened more than 100 years ago. South Carolina Public Radio's Victoria Hansen has this story.
To understand where someone is coming from, it helps to know where they've been. Will Haney is the mayor of the state's fourth largest city, Mount Pleasant. It's just outside of Charleston.
I think it's a very dangerous proposition.
He's meeting with council members virtually, as he's done during much of the coronavirus pandemic. Back in late March, they allowed the mayor to issue a stay-at-home order 1 week before the governor did so. But now there's discord over how to reopen.
Just to echo what the last few council members have said, I just feel like this is just too much government.
There's been a lot more flack on the let's get back to normal side than there was on the coming in side.
Initially, the community popped as a hotspot for COVID-19. But weeks of quarantine have left people restless, including the mayor. Only he's restless, wondering, is the town doing too much too soon?
And I'm the great-grandson of someone who died in the second wave of the Spanish flu epidemic in this state in 1919. So am I wary? You better believe I'm wary of the second wave.
Mayor Haney learned about his family's fate when he was a senior in high school. His maternal grandmother, Lucy Sherrard Sullivan, had just passed away. He never knew she was an orphan. She was 7 when her mother lost her life to the Spanish flu. It's believed her father did too, although less is known about his history. Lucy Sullivan grew up in an orphanage.
I think about her often.
He also thinks about his friend and fellow Citadel graduate Jack West. He lost his life to the current coronavirus pandemic. Another friend, his pastor, was hospitalized with the virus and put on a ventilator. Recently, the mayor's parents had to be tested. Fortunately, they were negative. A potential second wave, like the one that orphaned his grandmother, is very much on his mind.
Hope we don't have it. Hope we've learned.
The last great pandemic, it was pretty quickly forgotten.
Jacob Steer Williams is an historian at the College of Charleston. He has spent the past 20 years studying pandemics, like the Spanish flu of 1918 and 1919. Worldwide, it killed more than 50 million people. Charleston was ground zero for South Carolina, and Steer Williams says its mayor called for a quarantine in the fall of 1918. It lasted roughly 5 weeks. People became anxious. The numbers seemed to plateau. So on November 11th, Armistice Day, marking the end of World War I, the mayor invited people out to celebrate.
The bells started ringing out, people threw on clothes, and they made their way to Marion Square.
He says 5,000 people gathered at 3 o'clock in the morning.
News reports mention revolvers going off, bells being clanged, flags being hoisted, and this lasted for several hours.
But weeks following that mass celebration, the flu was back with a vengeance, sickening hundreds and claiming even more lives.
And the mayor and the health officer are faced with this really difficult, embarrassing situation, and they're forced to reissue another quarantine.
So will history repeat itself?
We can learn from the past, and that we can see how panic ensues. We can see how blame and xenophobia is part of the process.
100 years later, we are still learning as we weigh lives against livelihoods.
I can tell you, I had to have some soul-searching moments. I had to look myself in the mirror and ask myself, what could I live with?
A novel coronavirus with some not-so-novel consequences.
And Victoria will be bringing us a report from Lowcountry Beaches in time for our Memorial Day weekend pod. Hey, don't forget to take the lead with you to the beach or wherever you end up this weekend. Let us know what you did by leaving us a voicemail at 803-563-7169. And let's not forget what this weekend is really about, remembering those who sacrificed their lives for our country. Now for a medical update. South Carolina Public Radio's Felicia Eady has this report on COVID-19 health outcomes in the African-American community.
About 400 people in South Carolina have died from COVID-19, more than half of them African-American. This information causes pause because Black residents make up just 27% of the state's population. The South Carolina African-American Heritage Commission has launched a statewide project they hope will help show how this global pandemic is redefining what it means to be Black in the state. Ramon Jackson is coordinator.
These stories matter. You know, when America gets a cold, African-Americans catch pneumonia. And in this case, when America catches COVID, sizable percentage of African-Americans are dying.
Jackson says through the project, Black Carolinians Speak, Portraits of a Pandemic, residents are encouraged to submit first-person testimonies, letters, music, images, art, and other documents that capture the experiences of African-Americans in the state during this time. He says this type of collection can be both cathartic.
It runs the full range of emotion. I received a submission today from a business owner who really kind of expressed mixed emotions about sharing their story with our project because of the anger and the frustration.
But also a research tool and resource that, if used correctly, can help shape the lives of future generations.
We have to make sure that we collect these stories, preserve them for future generations, and wherever possible, use these stories to influence public policy and, you know, push politicians to think more deeply about how these disparities kind of shape our society.
Online, residents are asked to share how the pandemic has impacted their personal life, family, businesses, church, or community. They can also share how they've shown resourcefulness or learned new skills to help them adjust to the crisis.
I've been making primarily theater art for about 20-something years.
Columbia artist Darian McLeod recently submitted information to the project.
In a span of like 2 days, I lost like 6 months worth of work with no other income in a foreseeable future. You know, even things that were scheduled out further started dropping off.
McLeod submitted what he calls the beta episode of his online storytime videos called The Magic Purple Circle. Here's a clip.
First day of the lockdown, lockout, shutdown, shut out, shuttered.
At the beginning of the quarantine, McLeod says he was just looking for a way to help families. You can hear that here in this first episode.
So in times of stress and time of trouble, we do what we do. And one of the things I do is tell stories, or for this, I'm going to read some stories. Okay. So March 2nd was Dr. Seuss's birthday. And I know a lot of kids probably at their school had Dr. Seuss celebrations planned. So for this beta test, guess who we're going to read?
Drawing from the resourcefulness the commission's project is looking to capture. Both McLeod and his wife are gig workers, making their living as artists. He says he hopes his submission to Black Carolinians Speak, Portraits of a Pandemic, will help shed light on struggles within the Black artist community.
It's its own community. You know, we are the fringe of the fringe, but we're still important. As a matter of fact, sometimes we're super important because we are the fringe. So to have a project like this where, you know, we get to tell our stories, uncompromised. You know, we get to tell our stories. I just appreciate that opportunity.
The project has been in operation for a little over 2 weeks, and at this time, submissions will be accepted through October.
Thanks, Alicia. You can find that and other stories on SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. What are your plans for Memorial Day? Do you have any plans for this weekend? Are you going out to eat? When are you going to go out? What makes you comfortable? You've heard from some people that we talked to today about their new normal. Tell us about yours at 803-563-7169. And like I said, this is our new normal, even though some people don't like that phrase. Are you one of those people that don't like that phrase? Well, tell me why. 803-563-7169. You might just get on the pod. And AT, do we have a voicemail today, by any chance?
We do, and the caller brings up a pretty good point that we blew it the other day. So,
let's
roll it.
Roll tape.
Hey guys, what's going on? This is Andrew down in Mount Pleasant. My wife and I have two little kids, and we're both working from home, so we're trading shifts at the laptop while the other one sets up the other laptop for kids to have Zoom class meetings several times a day and to get the kids outside. Showering when we can, and my hair hasn't been this long since college. Really just trying to enjoy the fact that we're getting so much time to spend with each other, and that's a blessing. You asked about pop culture blind spots. I never seen E.T., and I rejected TGIF. Just didn't like it. But I gotta say, though, if you're gonna call out Towner for not watching The Princess Bride, how can you get all the way through that and never say the fact that he hasn't seen the movie was inconceivable? Come on, guys.
Andrew from Mount Pleasant, thank you for calling and for calling me out. Sometimes I get a little blindsided, and I even told AT after we finished taping that I missed out on saying some classic lines. I fell victim to one of the classic blunders, the most famous of which is never get involved in a land war in Asia, but only slightly less well known is this: never going against a Sicilian when death is on the line.
Okay, there we go.
I got it out.
That redeems us a little bit.
Yeah, right? And just so you guys know, we're tossing around the idea of scaling back a little bit of our podcast to possibly two a week soon, just because things have stabilized a bit, things are adjusting, we're kind of getting into a groove with this news cycle, so we're kind of getting an idea maybe sometime in June. Tell us what you think and how you feel about it. We got some great ideas, some other great ideas that we want to start working on this summer as well, but tell us what you think about the production schedule and what you think we might or might not need to do. 803-563-7169.
If you guys feel strongly about three episodes a week, you let us know, because we're going to listen to you folks.
I'm going to listen to my heart.
Okay. Yeah. First of all, we both need to be true to ourselves. Yeah, okay. I mean,
lead, laugh, love exists for a reason.
That is not just a saying. That is a way of life.
We also discussed.
I think the Dalai Lama came up with that phrase. Not us. It wasn't us.
18 also discussed how Princess Bride is one of those movies that really gave you that irrational fear of quicksand that you thought was going to be like dominating your adult life, but is not a problem.
Sand, if it's sand, you're going to sink. You're going to sink.
I mean,
and you're going to die.
Sinkholes are a bigger threat than quicksand, but.
Wrong. Yeah, that's big. That's big quicksand pulling the wool over your eyes.
Obviously, one of those was when Artax the horse was tragically in the swamp.
Never ending story.
The Misery Swamp.
I never ended. Never ended crying never ending, for me on my end.
Anyone out there not seen the Never Ending Story? Let us know. Watch it. Tell me your thoughts.
If you're a horse lover, don't watch it. You will cry.
AT, what's up?
Okay, I got. I was supposed to go to the dentist for the first time
this
week when everything opened, and since I just haven't been keeping track of any of the days, I forgot to go.
Zoink. Zoink. Can we get like a sound effect?
Zoink. Yeah, sure. Boing, 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 boing. Yeah, totally. What else? What else is new? I watched John Wick 3 Parabellum the other day, and speaking of horses, he with two separate horses. Times the horse kicks and murders two people with a horse. So
incredible.
I was like, this is out of control. Horse murder here. Everyone's talking about horse murders. It's it was a lot to take in. And it was like right away. Top of the movie, horse murders. So that was a lot.
Where can we see this movie?
It's on HBO.
Gotcha.
Yeah. John Gavin Wick. Is writing down. He's like, horse murder, horse murder.
Well, there goes my podcast idea for the summer, but keep going.
And then one last thing. I bothered you with all of this last night. I made pizza the other day.
You did.
And I did a really good job. And I did a cold ferment on my doughs. So
I
got a lot of good flavor. Yeah, I got the new cookbook that I talked about before.
You were really hyped up and you just kept sending me pictures, and I was like, I can't eat those pizzas.
Yeah. I was like, look at the bubbles.
What do you want me to do with this right now?
And I came up with that great hashtag for people who love pizza crust. I got
Crusty Crusters?
No, Papa's got the crust lust. Hashtag crust lust. What's new with you?
You know it when you see it. I mean, I'm thinking that we need to start maybe you, everyone that's listening, start thinking about some of the things that you've accomplished during quarantine. I know everyone's like, oh, you know, you can do whatever you want. There's no expectations during quarantine, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I mean, I'm not asking you if you've wrote your novel or whatever, but I've definitely noticed that, like, you know, I've rearranged some things. I've made the house nicer. You know, I moved the bookshelf around. And so I'm just,
did you Marie Kondo yourself?
I haven't Marie Kondo'd myself entirely yet because so much brings me joy. But I'm thinking like it'd be fun to compile like things that you've done, have accomplished, maybe things you put off that you've now had the chance to do. Maybe you've been furloughed, maybe you've been laid off and you know, still got some money coming, but you've had some time to recoup, hit pause, just do some things. Even as basically like, you know, you making different pizzas, you know, I've been.
Have you read Infinite Jest yet? I don't, you know, I haven't. You've read I haven't
Infinite
done it.
Jest. Like, I feel like I feel like I've upped my cooking a little bit more just because I'm in the house more. I'm sticking around
you
here.
You started
so like,
using onions. That's not upping your cooking that much. You just used onions.
That's upping my cooking because I'm using more onions because I had 10 pounds of them. And I'll have you know, they're pretty much all gone.
How about you talk to me when you start using shallots, okay, bud? You're embarrassing yourself.
Okay. How about you talk to me when you get more than 3 ounces of capers? Because some of us buy them by the pound, okay? Let's not get into it. Let's just think about things that we've accomplished, good or bad. Everyone's accomplished one or two things. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but you made it through this far, so something had to happen. And let us know, 803-563-7169. And thanks again for tuning into the pod. You can keep up with the latest news on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. They're in a tough spot, but they're also out there hustling every day, working to get you the news. And once you get your fill of the news, take a break from it. Write down some things, accomplish some things, cross things off your list. You can also follow me on Twitter at Gavin Jackson for the latest news. And I'll also let you know if the governor's holding a press conference that day, which is usually carried on SCETV at 4:30 p.m., as well as South Carolina Public Radio. We are here for you, our lead community, throughout this whole crisis, situation, whatever you want to call it, as it continues to develop. We are in full-scale hashtag lead, laugh, love mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. No, I am human.
I am human. Do not worry. Do you know any nuclear codes? I am a human. You could tell me.
I don't know.